Welcome to this week's edition of Sports Flight FYI with James Hill, and joining me as always, Sean Bush. This week, we open up by talking about the Major League Playoff Series. We are now talking about the Championship Series as the Angels open up as they visit the Chicago White Sox, and the Houston Astros once again play the St. Louis Cardinals. We will also review the NFL Week 5, what transpired. Let me ask you something, Sean. Flag Day, has that been changed to October the 9th?
I didn't get no statement saying it's been changed. It's always June 14th, so why did you ask that question?
Well, because the Baltimore Ravens, Miami Dolphins, and I believe it was also the New Orleans Saints combined for 52 penalties on Sunday, which contributed to their losses by a combination of a whopping 73 points on Sunday.
Well, and bulk of that was for the Baltimore Ravens for just basically acting stupid up in Detroit. I guess that's the closest they're going to ever get to the Super Bowl, since it's going to be in Detroit this year, so they just figured they're going to act out.
You know, I have a thing about that with regards to Detroit. It appears as though every time the Super Bowl is held in Detroit, and I believe this will be the second time,
right,
the Cincinnati Bengals always make it to the Super Bowl. Remember, they played San Francisco in the Super Bowl in the 80s in Detroit.
Wow. Now, that's a stretch. Now, I do remember that Super Bowl because that was actually the first Super Bowl that I ever remember watching. So that Super Bowl always has a spot in my heart. But that's really a stretch.
Well, I mean, they are number 3 in overall defense.
Which they did not show against Jacksonville.
Well, yeah, it wasn't one of their better games.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can smell a homer when I can see one.
No, come on.
Okay,
you know I'm not a Bengals fan.
Okay, I'm just saying. You know, y'all Ohioans, you need to stick together.
Also on this edition of Sport Flight, we will discuss the historically black college scores and also the conference rankings. This week's Bronze Pioneer is former Cleveland Browns punter Horace Gillum, the first black NFL punter. We will also provide you with this week's aficionado question. But we start with a topic that was covered the first week of the football college season, where Sport Flight reviewed the 7 new Division I-A coaches and their programs. There have actually been 21 new Division I-A coaches, but we chose the 7 at some high-profile schools. We are at approximately the halfway point, and we're going to take a look at their season. We're talking about such names as Steve Spurrier, Charlie Weiss, Urban Meyer, Les Miles, Tyrone Willingham, your favorite, Sean, Dave Wannstedt.
Oh, yes.
And Greg Robinson. Let's start by looking at Steve Spurrier returning to the college ranks. His South Carolina team is now 3-3. And the combined 7 new coaches have a combined record of 19-18.
Well, with Spurrier, he doesn't have the horses that he is accustomed to having. So you knew that was going to be a very rocky road that he was going to be facing. And then also he's back in the SEC as well. So that doesn't surprise me one bit that he's having only a 500 record. Doesn't surprise me absolutely at all. So once he starts getting into his recruits, so this year I think it's going to be a pass for him, and I think I said that before. Once he starts getting his recruits and his people in there and his players that he is used to recruiting, then you're going to see the Spurrier ball of old. So we go ahead giving it about. I give him a pass this year, and we'll see in about 2 years how he will do as far as South Carolina.
I still think he's going to have problems because he's going up against Florida State, Miami, and other teams coming into Florida recruiting those top-caliber athletes coming out of Florida. I think Spurrier is going to have a tough time recruiting. Before, he had a base there in Gainesville,
mm-hmm.
and those kids could stay in the state. Now he's asking them to come to South Carolina. The program is a dog program as it stands right now. I don't think he's going to be as successful recruiting this time around as he was in the past.
Oh, do not get me wrong. I didn't say it was going to be it was definitely not going to be an easy task. But nonetheless, I think because a lot of people knows the name. It's name recognition, and they will go with name recognition regardless. Where is he could have played? He could have coached at the University of Alaska. There will be some people going up to Alaska to play football for him.
For Steve Spurrier.
So yeah, I'm not saying it's going to be it's not going to be a walk in the park. It's going to be a little bit tougher. But he might not get any 20 to 25. Five-star recruit, he might get about 8 or 10, but he's still going to go ahead and get those 8 or 10 that he can get to help mold this team into a viable champion-type team. So I wouldn't be surprised of it all, but Spurrier belongs in college ball, and we saw by the disaster that he had in Washington, it just wasn't working for him. So, like I said, I give him two more years, and then you come back and talk to it. We talk about that, talk and see how he does in South Carolina.
The most visible and the most ballyhooed coach of the seven, Charlie Weiss at Notre Dame, with a record of 4-1. His biggest test of the season comes up this Saturday when USC comes in to visit.
You think? And like we said before, Charlie Weiss, you know, he brought the credentials that he needed from the pro game. He has really turned that Notre Dame team around because I didn't give him much credit as well. I thought they was going to go 2-2 by now. 2-3 by now before getting up to USC. So for them to go into Ann Arbor, and yes, I called it. I thought that Michigan was going to pimp slap Notre Dame, and they turned it around and pimp slap Michigan. The offense is working. They have the people that can go ahead and play. Now, that being said, the toughest task that he's ever going to have, and I will even rank this is Weiss' toughest coaching week, more than what he did in the pros and also in the Super Bowl, because USC is darn near a pro caliber team. I'm just saying that. I really do believe USC, once they roll over Notre Dame, they are going undefeated. I don't see nobody on their schedule that's going to beat them. The only people that's going to beat USC is USC. They turn over the ball, Notre Dame has a chance. But if they don't and play the game that they normally do, USC is going to win. But by any stretch of the imagination, Charlie Weiss has done an excellent job. And look, they're 4-1. They're two-thirds away from being bowl eligible. And when we mean bowl eligible, that's BCS. They're not going to no Outback Bowl. They're going to one of the four major bowls on New Year's, January 1st and January 2nd. So, Weiss has done a lot as far as helping this team reach their full potential.
Speaking of USC, probably their toughest games remaining after Notre Dame would be Washington State, and also their very last game, their traditional rival UCLA, who is also undefeated thus far this season.
Oh, absolutely. UCLA has UCLA has been really, really under the radar. Nobody's really giving them the props because of USC is just dominating college sports. So UCLA is almost like the stepchild right here. So that game, let those two be undefeated, will be a great game.
The most sought after of the seven coaches during the offseason was Urban Meyer coming out of Utah. Urban Meyer had been successful at Bowling Green, taking his act to Utah again, once again successful. Now he takes over the Florida Gators. And Ron Zook, who is now at Illinois, left the cupboards pretty full. As the record indicates, Florida Gators are at 5-1.
Oh, absolutely. Meyer was not coming into, like you said, a bare cabinet. They were fully stocked and ready to go. And as you can see, they was pretty much running on all cylinders. They took a big road bump against Alabama, which I was not expecting Alabama to play as well as they did against Florida. Urban Meyer knows what he's doing. Spread offense in Florida with those great receivers and Leak. You really can't beat that. And the defense is very well. They didn't show against Alabama, but I think he's going to make the corrections, and they're going to just keep on going like nothing happened.
Les Miles takes over for Nick Saban at LSU. LSU, as always, has a tough schedule, and they had a little more with Mother Nature this year with Hurricane Katrina, so they got a late start to their season. Les Miles and LSU is currently at 3-1.
And yeah, and that one loss was a very devastating loss because with everything that was going along, they finally got their first home game. With the emotions of everything dealing with Hurricane Katrina, and actually was up by 21 points in that game at one point in time, and to completely self-implode was very, very devastating for them because they was ranked number 4 at the time. Took a huge hit by losing to Tennessee, but that defense is very, very well-rounded. I also, because they don't give a lot of credit, but the offense is very, very good. I see them go ahead. They already got the pickup and rebound very well. I will see them actually continue on with the rebound and do very well this season.
Dave Wannstedt in Pittsburgh wins their second game this past Saturday as they defeated the University of Cincinnati 38-20. That brings their record to 2-4. Wannstedt is not having a very illustrious opening season with Pittsburgh.
Well, I hate to call this one, but I called this all along. Wannstedt is just not a good coach. There's really nothing else to say about that. He's just not a good coach, period. He hasn't proved nothing. He's a great coordinator. He's just not a good head coach. And no matter what level of football he has played, pro or college, the result remains the same. He's not good at running an entire football team. And it shows. Pittsburgh wasn't all that great anyway. I'm not saying that they was going to go up and win for a national championship. But the mistakes that was constantly made over and over again and the very conservative play calling by Pittsburgh is Wannstedt's M.O. Trust me, I know this by full experience with his dealings with the Bears. The only thing that saved him during when he was with the Bears was the defense. But when you don't have no defense, have no offense, you're going to lose games. And that's what's basically going on right now.
Well, bringing up the rear, the last two programs, Washington and Syracuse, Tyrone Willingham taking over the program in Washington. It was a poor program when he took it over, so it's going to take some time. And I do believe at this particular juncture he will receive the time necessary in order to build that program and to recruit some athletes there. Same thing with Greg Robinson at Syracuse. Syracuse is pretty much known for as being a basketball power, not a football power whatsoever. It's going to take some time for Greg Robinson to turn that program into a winner, as each Tyrone Willingham and Greg Robinson are each at 1-4 at this juncture.
Well, and both of them, also the sticking points with both of those, is they're in very tough conferences. The Big East is really a tough conference as far as football now. Nobody's giving that any looking into that. The Big East is a very tough football conference now, and Syracuse has been left back on that curve, and they're going to struggle. They lost to Connecticut. Now, do not get me wrong. UConn and Syracuse is a great basketball matchup. It's not a great football matchup because both teams are not that good. UConn is very up and coming now, and they put a beat down on Syracuse last week. Same thing goes for Washington. You're playing in the Pac-10. You not only got to deal with UCLA, USC, but you got to also deal with a very tough Arizona State team who's been running up numbers up and down the running the ball up and down the field all year. So right there, you just got some – they got some tough games, but, they're going to go ahead and work on it as best they can. But like you said, both of these coaches are going to need time as far as recruiting and getting established their feet in these very, very tough conferences.
Moving on to baseball, the Major League Baseball playoffs are underway, and now we are into the championship series. Very surprising that the Angels would come back and win last night. Most people had predicted because they were playing their third straight night game in three different time zones, as they were in the Eastern time zone. They moved out to the Pacific Coast time zone. And now last night they played in the Central time zone. But surprisingly, they win 3-2. I think that the American League Championship Series is set up for Chicago to win, though, because of their rest and the fact that they have been able to set up their rotation the way they would like. So Ozzie had Contreras as his number one pitcher once again. And he pitched a good game.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago did not play a smart game, which is abnormal for them. And it often, I laugh sometimes when a lot of people talk about how Chicago plays small ball. They play small ball, but they were number two in home runs in the American League.
Yes.
So they also can stroke the long ball as well. So Ozzie has them playing very, very well. They did have a lapse there for about a month, month and a half. But since the end of the season, they have been playing extremely well. And I still give the advantage to Chicago.
Oh, absolutely. The pitching staff is very good, and as far as more depth, I do believe in the Angels. The second best is actually the team they're facing is the Angels. They have a great pitching staff as well. So
with the loss of Bartolo Colon, that's going to hurt them immeasurably.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right, especially since he is not going to be – he is done for the playoffs. But losing your ace does hurt.
I don't
but
think he's done for the playoffs. I know he's done for the championship
series. He's done for the championship series. That's what they said. So because I am picking the White Sox as well, that's what I'm saying, done for the playoffs.
Okay.
But that's not my real concern, because the thing about it is with the Angels is they're so deep, they're able to plug in one of their relief pitchers and put him in as a starter. But that's what you do anyway in the playoffs. You usually have about six starters. One goes in and goes into the bullpen, and then when it comes down to maybe game six or game seven, everybody's willing to play, and you see starters coming in to pitch like we've seen in the National League, and we saw in game five with the Angels, because Colon, who just from the get-go just didn't look right, period. And for Irvin to come in and pitch excellent, I don't care it went five series, but if you give an MVP for that whole series, you will give it to Irvin, because he came in and pitched five strong innings and kept the Yankees at bay to win game five. But you know what? I don't want to hear about the whole, they play three night games in 3 days and three different time zones. You know what? They do that anyway. They play games anywhere from 25 to 30 games. Yes, I know they play 3-4 games in one city at a time, but they still got to travel. They still got to travel and then play the next game. So as far as I'm concerned, they are very accustomed to doing this. Now, it is probably the most extreme case. Like you said, they went from east, west, central. You're ready to play. Ball players are ready to play whenever you tell them to play. They could have actually played in France, and I think still pulled out the performance that they did.
Well, you got Burley going against Lackey tonight. So, once again, the advantage should be with Chicago, and they also have home field advantage. But with Chicago losing game one, if Chicago does lose game two, it will be pretty difficult for them to come back and win four out of the next five.
Oh, absolutely. It'll be very hard, because you know what? One thing that helped the Angels win their World Series was the home field advantage. That crowd gets very raucous, and they feed off of that. And if you look, I think the very key play in that Yankees-Angels Game 5 was Finley's line shot to right center. In any other park, Crosby would have made that catch. But because Crosby and Sheffield could not hear each other, they ran dead into each other.
Crosby's not the regular center fielder. He's not a regular center fielder.
But that's,
anyway,
that's regardless. That's regardless. They could have, Crosby could have easily called off in any other park, could have easily called off Sheffield, and he would have made that catch with no problem. But because they could not hear each other, they was both running the ball, what they were supposed to do. That's why you had the collision. You had a triple. If it was like Figgins who hit that ball, that would have been easily inside the park homer. Step two runs came in, and they never lost the lead after that. I believe that was the key play. So that field for the Angels is very, very important. So it's very, extremely important. This is a must-win for the Chicago White Sox if they want to go ahead and go to the World Series.
Yeah, and the Angels already have their split because they were looking for a split.
When you go
back home with a split.
Exactly. When you're on the road for the first two games, the only thing you care about is a split. If you can get two games, that's gravy. But you're just looking for one win. They got their one win. They're very much happy because they know they're going home for two.
Taking a look at the National League with the Championship Series, it comes down to the same as it was last season. You have the Cardinals entertaining the Astros once again. Will the Astros pitching outduel the Cardinals hitting?
I truly believe the Cardinals are just the best team remaining in the playoffs. That was my pick to win the World Series. I just believe their hitting is absolutely great. And believe it or not, playing in Houston actually is an advantage for the Cardinals because of their great hitting. They got the great hitting and they got the speed. So regardless what anybody tells me, you go 18 innings on Sunday and play everybody that's in uniform. That's going to take a toll on you. I think more so than the whole traveling mess that the Angels did. Everybody had to pitch. Everybody's off their schedule. That's going to be extreme problems for Houston, especially for Game 1.
You know, as surprisingly as it may seem, there was only 9 home runs as far as the difference between St. Louis and Houston, because most of the times you hear how Houston just does not score runs, and Roger Clemens could attest to that. But you always hear about the St. Louis Cardinals and their hitting attack. Well, St. Louis had 170 home runs for the season. Houston had 161.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, but once again, that's Houston taking advantage of their park. When you play in a hitter's park like that, I don't give a care what nobody says, where you can go ahead and get extra base hits, you have a potential to put a man on scoring position on one swing at a bat on that field. You can get that park also. You can get a lot of triples, especially you hit in basically Death Valley 2 with the running heel. That park is absolutely great. The thing is with Houston is, which they have a propensity of doing, they have to score runs. They have to score runs, especially for Roger, because Roger will be pitching. I'm assuming he's pitching at least two games, possibly three. They're going to score runs for Andy because they always have. So it's going to be very important for Roger to get run support. If he does, Houston could pull this out. I just don't think that's going to happen. I believe their hitting is just 1-9 is absolutely great, and they got enough of the pitching staff to go ahead and beat them. And I believe they're going to beat them in 5 games. And also they have the rest. They've had more rest than anybody else in the playoffs.
Well, when you hear about pitching and people talk about pitching, you think that the Houston pitching staff would be so much more superior to St. Louis, but they are 1-2 in ERA, with St. Louis having the better ERA.
Exactly.
Than Houston. So oftentimes you have to take a look inside the numbers as opposed to always listening to what some of the pundits or experts state. So let's get your picks for the American League Championship Series. Will it be Chicago or will it be L.A.?
I'm picking Chicago in 6 games. I just believe that their pitching is going to help them, is going to basically bail them out of the little hole that they have right now. I think the especially the relief pitching is going to prevail and have them go on to the World Series.
I have to agree with you with the White Sox. The White Sox have the advantage with the home field. They also have the better pitching, especially in light of the fact that Bartolo Colon is now out of the championship series. So I have to go with the White Sox as well. They can play small ball, and they can go long on you as well. So it's got to be the White Sox this year returning to the World Series for the first time since 1959.
Yeah.
In the National League with the championship series, do you pick the Cardinals or the wild card Astros?
I'm going, once again, the best team in baseball. I am going to go with the St. Louis Cardinals to basically go on the road and face the White Sox in the World Series. I believe the Cardinals is going to win, like I said, in five games.
I have to agree with you. The St. Louis Cardinals are equal to Houston as far as the overall pitching staff, and even having a slightly better ERA than Houston. They definitely have a much better offensive team than that of the Houston Astros. And because they also have the home field advantage and the experience, and they're hungry from losing it last year, especially after being swept in four in the World
Series
last year. So I've got to go with the Cardinals this year. They're hungry for it. They have the better overall talent on offense and defense, so I have to go with the Cardinals in this particular instance. Let's move into week five of the NFL. Which game or games surprised you the most this past week in week five?
I think what surprised me the most, honest to God, was Green Bay decided, you know what, we going to just wreck everybody from the 60s, the 50s, and the 70s, and we going to all put them on the field at the same time. So we going to give New Orleans 3 points, and then we going to bust 50 on your butts.
I think they were taking out their frustrations of the prior 4 weeks.
You think?
New Orleans Saints.
I think
all teams, they should have waited for another team. The Saints have gone through enough this season.
You know what? As much as the Saints has gone through, as far as the stuff they've gone through, but they are a professional team that goes out there and has to play a game. It's just that simple. It's almost going to the point of going back to the whole 9/11 thing with the Yankees and the Mets. Everybody just assumed the Yankees and the Mets were going to go to the World Series. Everybody just assumed that they was going to go to the World Series and win the World Series because, gosh darn it, it was their destiny to do that. No. There's still, 29 other teams.
Yeah, you got to play the games on the field. Oftentimes people take a look at the teams and how they are constructed, but they don't think about the chemistry makeup of the team, and they make a decision based upon last year's performance, the additions or subtractions for this year's team, and then make an assessment, which is part of the business that I are in as well.
And do not get me wrong, New Orleans didn't have a great team to start with.
New Orleans has a team that has not played up to the caliber of what they have as far as players. They have some very good players on that team, but they simply have not played their best football. Now, whether that is because of motivation or whether that is because of technique, it all goes back to the head coach, Hazlitt.
Absolutely.
But I don't think Hazlitt will get the axe this year because of the of Mother Nature and what has happened. You can't blame him for that. So he gets another year of reprieve. Some people have stated that they thought he would have gotten the axe within the last year or two because they have not performed up to their caliber of players that they have on that team.
Right. Well,
but I tell you the game that surprised me the most this weekend, in light of that blowout by Green Bay over New Orleans, was Dallas just annihilating Philadelphia. It was as if Philadelphia took the day off.
That is true. And then what was more surprising?
33-10.
Yeah, I don't know what was so surprising. The beatdown that they gave the Eagles, or basically your two best offensive players ready to kill each other when you're up by 24. Can't y'all all be happy. We should be up by 32. Dude, we up by 28. But if you catch the ball, we've been up by 45. What? I'm going to give me a helmet. Yo, slow it down.
But those were the surprises for me this past week. Now, I did do something that was strange for me, and we'll get into that during our last segment on the show with regards to New England. I didn't think that New England could do it this week. I thought that things perhaps had finally caught up with them, but they came back and upset Atlanta in Atlanta, 31-28.
You strange? No. There you go, trying to take my spotlight again. I'm getting tired of this. Know your role.
That and the Jets upsetting Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay dropping out of the ranks of the undefeated.
Well, and here's once again the media again pumping up something very, I think, totally unnecessary, and that is, you know, how wonderful Vinny Testaverde came out with just only 6 days to prepare and was able to go ahead and play an NFL football game and go ahead and take his team out victory. Vinny has been playing football in NFL for 35 years. It doesn't take it. People, it's not really that hard as far as getting down on offense. It's not. They pared down the offense for him for the game because it was so short. They didn't throw the whole playbook and say you need to learn this by 6 days. They took out a chunk of the playbook and say, learn these few plays, and we're going to be all right, and we're going to slowly implement you on giving you more stuff. That's all. Let's call it like it is. And honestly, I bet you he knew about the playbook a couple of days before his signing. They was just asking him if he was going to, if you'd be interested in the play, we'll work out the framework of the contract. If you are, here's the playbook.
Well, as you stated, Vinny's been around forever, so it doesn't take that much for Vinny to determine. It's just different terminology, primarily.
That's all it is. The plays are still the same. It's just how you saying it.
And they have, and the Jets have a new offensive coordinator, Humendinger, coming over from Tennessee. He likes to play more of a vertical game, going downfield, as opposed to the coordinator they had last year, who seemed to play more east-west ball as opposed to going downfield. He was more of the West Coast type demeanor.
Right.
So, and Vinny loves to go down. Vinny still has that arm.
He still got the arm.
Still has that arm.
You know, he might not be able to throw it 70, 75 yards like he did, but he can still throw it 50 to 55. That's still good enough.
Absolutely, absolutely. He still has that arm.
He still got the arm. That's one thing. Your legs can go, but if you still got the arm, you gonna have a position somewhere.
I want to remind our audience that Sport Flight, FYI, is sponsored by UrbanCollegeSports.com. When you need information on your black college scores, classic information, players of the week, and sport flight information overall, make certain that you click on to UrbanCollegeSports.com. This week's aficionado question of the week. The New York Yankees surpassed the 4 million mark in home attendance this season, becoming the third Major League franchise to reach this milestone. Name the two other Major League franchises to reach the milestone of 4 million fans. Repeating, the New York Yankees surpassed the 4 million mark in home attendance this season, becoming the third Major League franchise to reach this milestone. Name the other two Major League franchises. Each week on Sport Flight FYI, we take it upon ourselves to profile those former black athletes who opened the doors for today's athletes in Major League Baseball, in Major League Football, as well as the NBA. This week we are doing the Bronze Pioneers, meaning the NFL. Many black athletes of the past are recognized as symbols of struggle for freedom, justice, and equality, such as Jack Johnson, Joe Louis, Jesse Owens, and even Jackie Robinson. They all resonate with the public. However, names such as Fritz Pollard, Kenny Washington, Miriam Motley, and others have yet to be afforded similar public status. Sport Flight's Bronze Pioneers is in recognition of these black paragons of football nobility. This week's Bronze Pioneer, Horace Gillum. Gillum signed with the Cleveland Browns January of 1947 during the Browns' domination of the All-American Football Conference. A large part of the Browns' success was due to the contributions of Gillum and other black players, Marion Motley, Lynn Ford, and Bill Willis. During Gillum's college career, he gained notoriety as an outstanding punter and receiver, leading the nation in punting during his senior year at Nevada University. With the signing of Gillum, the Browns quickly became the most colorful team in professional football. Gillum's prowess as a punter paid large dividends for the Browns during Gillum's rookie season in 1947, as his punts often bottled up the opposition, as Gillum averaged 44.6 yards per punt. Never was Gillum's value more evident than during the championship game of 1947 between the Cleveland Browns and New York Yankees. Gillum's punts throughout the game repeatedly pinned the Yankees down in their own territory, as Gillum averaged 45 yards per punt on 5 kicks, resulting in the Browns' second consecutive All-American Football Conference championship and a 14-3 victory over the New York Yankees. Gillum played his entire 10-year career, 1947 through 1956, with the Cleveland Browns. Horace Gillum and other black paragons paved the road for today's black NFL players. This has been a Sport Flight, FYI, Bronze Pioneers. Well, let's move on to an area that you know and love, that's dear to your heart, the NBA report. The preseason has begun. The game started this week. There are 10, count them, 10 new coaches since the end of the season and the beginning of this season, 10 new head coaches in the NBA. They really know how to play the musical chairs in the NBA like no other league. Also, some of the teams are going to be without some of their star players. One in particular that you want to tell us about.
Yes, absolutely, because this was very important to me, because actually yesterday I did one of the first of possibly 6 fantasy football drafts that I'm going to participate in this season. One of the people that I had a problem with, I don't like hearing about people who have injuries, and I'm going to draft them. And one particular was Amon'ra Stoudemire. He was going to be easily a top 10 pick, regardless of any league. And
what is Stoudemire's height?
Stoudemire, they have him as 6'10". I don't believe that. I think he's 6'8", 6'7".
And playing center.
But he can jump darn near 15 feet, so he can play center. So with him, he was going to be an excellent fantasy player. I chose not to pick him. Somebody actually picked him 8th. Yesterday evening, come to find out, Stoudemire, who was going to have surgery but was going to miss 3 to 4 weeks and be ready for the regular season, well, he's out 4 months because of this phenomenon that has been happening with basketball players. He has a microfracture in his knee. So basically, it's very tiny bone breaks in your knee. And it has been happening over the course of the last 3 years with players. And it takes a very long time, especially with your knee, because of the stopping and jumping and the sudden movements that you got to make as far as a basketball player. So they found out that was basically the reason what was bothering him pretty much the whole summer. But they just thought it was inflammation, he was going to be fine. Well, they found that he had microfractures in his knee. So he's going to be out for 4 months. So pretty much he's out for the first half of the season.
Yeah, that's through February.
Yeah.
And then you got March, and he's really only going to be back for about a month and a half, because the playoffs begin about mid-April.
Yeah. So you're going to look for him. They're going to probably slow him down and then speed him up around January and February, so he can be ready right after the All-Star break. But we're just going to have to wait and see. But that is a huge, huge hit for the Phoenix Suns.
Does that put Kurt Thomas then at center? Will they move him over to center?
Absolutely.
Because he's come over from the Knicks.
Well, because that's exactly what he played when he was at New York. He played the center position. So you're going to have to move him over to center. But one of the things they was talking about was moving Kurt Thomas in the center position anyway and putting Stoudemire at the four, which they thought he was going to be a better fit for. He did not like playing the center position as much, learned to adjust to it and accept his role, and was willing to do it. But when they got the trade of Kurt Thomas, there was a lot of speculations that Kurt Thomas was going to stay at the five position because, let's be honest, Kurt Thomas can only do pretty much two things: rebound and play great interior defense. So there's no reason to put him at the four. Put him at the five, and then you can let Stoudemire, who can still get rebounds, but from time to time he can run out on the wings, what Sean Marion was doing. Now, what a great fast break to have Steve Nash. Who, on your left you have Marion, on your right you got Stoudemire. So that was going to open up the court even more, like they really need it.
Well, with the loss of Stoudemire for three quarters of the season, and also the trading of Richardson and Joe Johnson, they are going to be a drastically different team this season. They will not be leading the NBA in scoring this season.
Not necessarily. I do believe that the people that they did pick up in those trades will really help them along. So you look at Boris Draw, who they got as far as in the Joe Johnson trade. Look him for him to step up as far as on the two at the two position, replacing
Richardson.
No, replacing Richardson. So look for him. Look for Roger Bell, who did very well in Utah last year. So I look for those two guys as far as in the guard position to go ahead and help out. You still got Jim Jackson, who can move over to the three with absolutely no problem, and sometimes play a little bit of four.
But don't you think that Jim Jackson is better when he comes off the bench, because he is getting up there in age, and for them to expect him to be a starter for the entire season and be as productive as he was coming off the bench last year is a bit of a stretch?
I wouldn't say it's a bit of a stretch, but I think they can use him more as a three. But you're right. As far as being a sixth man, be that energy person, yeah, I think that's a great position. But now that Stoudemire has been is gone, they're going to need all the help they can get, because really they don't have that many centers on. They don't have that many big men on their roster. You also got Gary Grant, who's going to be going ahead and moving up, playing the four or the five in the starter role. He just basically got inserted into the starting lineup. So losing Stoudemire, you losing a lot of different factors. So they're going to have to tweak. They're going to have to tweak the lineup just a little bit. Don't be surprised that you see a situation where you got Jim Jackson playing the three, and then Sean Marion, who was going to be originally playing the three, move over to four now. So they gotta do a little mitch and match. But the thing about Phoenix is that's what made them so well, because of the mitch matches. You got an athletic power forward in Marion or Stoudemire, and you expect Tim Duncan to be running up and down the court guarding them. It's not going to happen. So look for them to use the matchups and see a different lineup. You can see a different lineup game to game, because they're going to just exploit the matchups that they're going to have as far as advantages.
And next week, I will give you the reasons why Phil did return to the Lakers. I'll give you my top five reasons why Phil Jackson returned to the Lakers.
Oh, Lord. Help us all.
But what does that move mean in light of the fact he's written the book? Obviously, there were some ruffled feathers there, and no one's going to admit to that publicly. but how will that play out during this upcoming season? And with so many new players coming in as well, mostly role players.
Well, it's going to play out simply as this. If they're winning, nothing's going to be heard about it. If they are performing worse than they were last year, it's going to get blown up to massive proportions. So it really all depends on how the Lakers do this season. They're giving, they're saying Kobe's going to take more emphasis as far as the ball handling and less emphasis on scoring, and give more of the load to Lamar Odom and make him have a Scottie Pippen type role. And what way to do the Scottie Pippen role? By having Scottie Pippen as an assistant coach. See Lamar Odom take a bigger chunk of the roles as far as the offensive duties is concerned. And, you know, because Kobe was second in the league in scoring, but his scoring was only almost matched their win total for the year. That's not good. That's not good at all. So look to see less emphasis of Kobe scoring and give him Odom more of a triple threat type, because he was able to do a double-double last year. Look at him for more of a close to a triple-double. I'm not saying he's going to get a triple-double, but he can easily average, you know, 18, 7 boards, and 8 assists this year. He can easily do that with the triangle, so it's going to be very interesting. But just like what Jordan had to do, Jordan had to trust somebody to help him become the champion. Once he started trusting Scottie on the court, that's the reason why they won the 6 championships. Kobe's going to have to do the same thing. Kobe's going to have to realize he cannot do all the scoring, all the passing, all the rebounding. He's going to have to trust somebody else. And right now it looks like he's going to go ahead and put that trust in Lamar Odom. We're just going to see what happens.
One final question regarding the NBA. The Detroit Pistons, we know that Larry Brown is now with the Knicks, and they have Flip Saunders, formerly with the Timberwolves. How much of a difference will we see in the play of the Pistons as opposed to when Brown was there?
Well, one thing for sure, you're going to see Darko actually play and not be the human cigar. That is one person who
so
is just happy as hell.
There's freedom for Darko.
Darko is free.
He free at last.
He has the shackles released from him. So that's one thing for sure. We got to see what this kid can do.
Darko can run with the big dogs.
Darko can go ahead and run with the big dogs. Then another thing is going to be very interesting, are they going to play a more up-tempo type game, which Flip Saunders likes to play?
Do they have the personnel to play an up-tempo game?
I believe they do, believe it or not. You're going to have Chauncey Billups and Rip Hamilton as your guards. Then you have Rasheed playing possibly 3, maybe the 4. You have Ben playing the 4, maybe the 5, and then another forward to round that out. I think the biggest difference is you cannot go and revert Ben Wallace to just a rebounder and a defensive person. You got to go ahead and let him score. Once Larry Brown let him open up the court and let him shoot, he turned out to have a great 12 to 15-foot jumper that he can constantly hit. You go ahead and bring in McDice back into the picture. I do believe they have the horses to go ahead and run up and down. And you also, one of the things about Rasheed Wallace can go back to that three-point line and hit that 3 constantly. So I think they have the horses to go ahead and go and run it a little bit more up-tempo. So that's going to be another key thing. On the Knicks, who had an up-tempo team, well, he likes to slow it down. And then you have a person in Marbury who likes to run and shoot first, shoot second, pass around about maybe third, definitely fourth. That would drive Larry Brown up a wall. So are those two players going to coincide? I see a major trade happening. I said a major trade was going to happen anyway with the Knicks. I really suspect another trade to be happening with the Knicks, because first and foremost, They have absolutely no front court. They traded it all away. They traded Tim Thomas and Sweeney as part of the deal to get Curry. You got about 9 point guards on your roster. You got about 12 guards on your roster. Some of those players got to go. So I would not be surprised to see a major deal with Marbury being traded out of the out of New York this season.
Moving to our HBCU, these are scores from Saturday's Black College Football from Division I AA. South Carolina State bounces back with a victory over Norfolk State, 35-21. Bethune-Cookman can't escape a shutout by Delaware State, 17-0. Hampton continues their run by crushing Gardner-Webb, 52-21. Alcorn State reverses their slide by downing Prairie View, 22-10. North Carolina A&T defeats Morgan State in 2 overtimes, 40-33. Texas Southern upended by McNeese State, 46-28. Alabama State rolls over Jackson State, 44-23. Winston-Salem State blasts Livingston, 42-14. Grambling dispatches Mississippi Valley State, 37-22. And Alabama A&M easily handles Southern, 20-7. Now the standings, conference standings. In Division I AA, the SWAC Eastern Conference. Alabama State is number 1 in the Eastern Conference. At their record is 5-1 overall. Conference record is 5-0. In the SWAC Western Conference, Grambling leads the SWAC West with a 3-1 overall record and a 3-0 conference record. In the MEAC, the number 1 team is Hampton at 6-0 overall with a conference record of 4-0. In Black College Division II football, the CIAA Eastern Conference, Shaw University is number 1, actually tied with Virginia State, at 4-3 overall with a conference record of 3-1 for Shaw University and Virginia State. In the CIAA Western Conference, St. Augustine leads with a 7-0 overall record, conference 4-0. Also, Winston-Salem is at 4-3 overall, but a conference record of 4-0. And finally, from the SIAC, your leader is Fort Valley State with a 6-1 overall record, a conference record of 6-0. For more information on Black colleges, make certain that you click on to urbancollegesports.com, urbancollegesports.com, for Black college scores, classic information, players of the week, and sport flight information. Let's go over our picks from last week and then take our picks for this upcoming week as well. Taking a look at what we did last week, I had a better record than you. This I had 4 winners, you had 2. Patriots and Atlanta. You chose the Patriots. I went against the grain and went with Atlanta. I missed out on that one. The Bears and the Browns. You chose Chicago. I chose the Browns. The Browns did win that one. We each missed out on the Eagles versus the Cowboys game, as each of us chose the Eagles to win that game. The Redskins versus the Broncos. We won on that one, as we each chose the Broncos. And the last game, the Steelers squeaked by the Chargers. Therefore, I win that one, as I chose the Steelers. You chose the Chargers. The overall record through 5 weeks, Sean, 20, James, 18. So I've cut it in half.
Moving on.
Week number 6 with the Pigskin Picks. Game 1. The New York Giants visit the Dallas Cowboys. This is a divisional game in Dallas with the Giants rookie gunslinger takes on the Dallas veteran quarterback. Giants are 3-1. Cowboys are 3-2.
I'm going to go ahead and pick Dallas, I think. And basically, the real reason is they're at home, and Dallas has been playing very well at home. Terry Glenn has established himself as the number one receiver, and because of Bledsoe Glenn's relationship back in New England, that is really going to prevail. I think Manny is really going to crack under the pressure playing in Dallas.
I'll take the other end of this. I'll go with the Giants. The Giants' defense is better than the Cowboys' defense at this juncture of the season. And I think the kid is maturing, and he'll be able to take on the Dallas crowd.
Wow, yeah, I think you're starting to jump on that bandwagon. Don't pull a hamstring jumping off the jumping on that bandwagon too quick.
Game number two, the Jacksonville Jaguars visit the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, the Jaguars are coming off their biggest win of the season as they defeated the then undefeated Cincinnati Bengals. And the Steelers, well, they dodged a bullet in San Diego as they go 3-1. The Jaguars are 3-2.
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and pick Jacksonville. I think because of Roethlisberger's injury, they're saying it's a bone bruise, but I just don't think he's going to be at 100%, and they really don't throw the ball anyway. So if he does not play, they won't throw it at all, and then you're going to see a lot of 8-9 front. So I think Jacksonville is going to go ahead and pull this victory out.
I have to go with the Steelers in this particular instance. They are at home, and in most instances, unless they play the New England Patriots, they are invincible at home. I'll take the Steelers, even with Roethlisberger's possible injury.
Okay.
Game number three, the New England Patriots visit Mile High Stadium, the Denver Broncos. Brady and company attempt to dissect the surprising Broncos defense at Mile High. Patriots are at 3-2. Broncos, a surprising 4-1.
Well, they're going to be 4-2 because I'm picking New England. Mile High Air, and also Belichick has really pretty much owned Mike Shanahan, so New England.
I did it once. I won't do it twice.
Yeah,
I've got to stay with the Patriots in this particular instance. I'll take the Patriots over the Broncos at Mile High.
You're going to pick the Patriots even on their bye week.
What? Were you shocked that I didn't pick them this past week?
Yeah.
So was I, and that's what I get. Game four. The Cleveland Browns travel to Baltimore. They take on the Baltimore Ravens. They have no identity, meaning the Browns, whether they are an offensive or defensive team. They take on the 21-penalty-ridden Baltimore Ravens to determine the AFC North cellar dwellers. Cleveland is presently at 2-2. Baltimore is at 1-3.
Well, I'm going to go ahead. One of two things is going to happen in this game. It's going to be either 12-9 or it's going to be 6-2 with 55 penalties and fight day on Sunday. But regardless, either way.
Bringing back the wrestling.
Yeah, either way.
WWF,
exactly. Either way, Baltimore's going to win both of those encounters. So I'm picking Baltimore to win this game.
I think Romeo has instilled some type of confidence in the Browns. The Browns will go into this game with a lot of confidence. The only thing that could hurt them is the fact that Braylon Edwards may be out much longer than they anticipated with this injury to his arm. It may even be a staph infection. That being the case, he may be out for quite a portion of the season. However, I've got to pick my Browns going into Baltimore. I could never pick the Ravens at any time over the Browns.
God. Let it go, man. Let it go.
And the final game, the St. Louis Rams visit the visit the Indianapolis Colts. The Marshless Rams visit the NFL's number one defense at the RCA Dome. The Rams are 2-3 with their loss this past weekend to Seattle, and the Colts are the only remaining undefeated team at 5-0.
I'm still picking Indy. I think Indy's going to pretty much run over the Rams. Offense is getting back into normal, and defense is just way too dominant. So it's going to be Indy over the Rams.
I couldn't have said it any better. I've got to go with the Colts as well. Well, it appears as though the clock on the wall has once again said, our time is up. Until next week, remember, never has so few owed so much to so many. And remember to click on to UrbanCollegeSports.com. And next week, join us when I'll give you my five reasons why Phil Jackson has rejoined the Los Angeles Lakers. Until next week, peace. We're out of here.